This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, Happy New Year to everybody down under. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Fiona Deering from Melbourne, Australia. And you are listening to a special Australian edition of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for the 8th, I think, of January. And this is episode number 1333, brought to you today by Remote Coach and Chamberlain's Lawyers. Good morning, horse world.
And for everybody in the United States, it's the 7th. We always have to clarify that every month.
So this is Anything Can Happen Thursday.
Everyone has a place. They're not just horses. They're part of my family.
Well, Happy New Year, everybody, and we are so glad to have you on. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, Glenn. How are you going? Happy New Year.
Well, I was watching you on New Year's because you made it before we did. So I was watching your Facebook, and I could tell when your clock turned because you guys are always ahead of us. So it's,
I watched the fireworks on TV, and I went to bed. I lived the high life.
I didn't make it till midnight. So you're much better than I was, actually. Well, it's so good to have you on, and we're looking forward to a fun 2016 with all of our listeners down in Australia and New Zealand.
Absolutely. Lots and lots on for 2016, and of course, we're all in summer down here now, so it's hot and dusty and windy and the odd bushfire, so yeah, I can start to say, you know, we got to 40 degrees, which is what, that's your 105, 110, I think.
You guys kind of have Jamie's temperatures, don't you? Like, she has in Phoenix.
Yeah. It's pretty hot. It's actually been really mild this week in Melbourne, but they tell us to brace ourselves for next week.
we're finally cooled off here in Florida. You know, we don't get real cold, and we get really hot in the summer. So we're finally cooled off now, and we actually need a little jacket to go outside. And I just made everybody who had snow this week really mad. So.
See, I can't impress you and Jamie with how hot it gets in Australia.
No, it gets pretty hot here too. you guys, you know, I always think about you guys at Christmas time because you're Santa's in shorts.
Yeah. We're sitting outside and got things on the barbecue and.
It's kind of neat, though. I'd love to spend, actually, it's on my bucket list to go to New Zealand, Australia, and I think it'd be a great time to do it at the holidays, just because it would be different.
It is. I went home to my parents in Tasmania this year, and it was really, really hot down there, and of course, it doesn't get that hot in Tasmania, and so no one has cooling, and I nearly died.
In Florida, we don't visit people unless they have air conditioning.
Yeah. Oh, I'm never moving into a house without evaporative or air conditioning again. But it was really hot. And, you know, everyone jokes and goes, oh, that's just silly. But, you know, 33 degrees in where my parents live in Launceston is the equivalent of sort of 36, 37 degrees anywhere here. And I can't do the conversion, but, you know, it's
almost 100, I think. Yeah.
So, you know, it really is, it's a hotter heat down there. And every year I'm a winner this year because I did not walk out that door unless I had a hat on and was slathered in sunscreen, because every year I get burnt even when I think I'm going outside for 20 minutes. So, yeah, I feel like I won that one.
Well, we wanted to mention that coming up on today's show, you had the get of the year so far. Tell us about your big interview coming up.
Well, you sent me the challenge.
I did, and you didn't take long to fill it either.
I was very fortunate to pre-record an interview with the wonderful Michelle Payne. Last night I did that interview, who, of course, is the winner of this year's Melbourne Cup on her fantastic horse, Prince of Penzance.
That's like winning our Kentucky Derby, just to correlate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Australia stops. I remember I used to work for a company who were based out of Milwaukee, and the president used to always have a bit of a bitch that Australia had more public holidays than you guys did, and he rang. He was a cranky old thing, and he rang my
Scrooge comes to mind.
Oh yeah, he rang the office one morning on a Tuesday in November, and of course there was no one there, and he rang my boss at home and went, you know. Well, I won't use his language, but, you know, why aren't you in the office? And Philip went, well, we've got a public holiday. And he went, what is it for this time? And poor Philip had to go, it's for a horse race. Apparently, Keith Mardack stomped around that office all day going, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Well, and this horse race was won for the first time by a woman.
A female jockey, yeah. And it was a huge, it's a massive international deal, the Melbourne Cup now. You know, it's the Godolphins bring a whole string of horses in, the Irish bring a whole string of horses in. You know, it really is. And I think last we've had Japanese horses win it and German horses win it. So it really is an international race. And as I think I said to Michelle in the interview, I watched the horses go round in the mounting yard and went, oh, you know, it doesn't kind of feel like a Melbourne race anymore. And then through she came, and it was, you know, against all these gazillion million-dollar horses, and won on her little $50,000 New Zealand bred thoroughbred. So yeah,
and we're going to talk a little bit more about that too, because there was a horse that nobody thought would win and had so much trouble before and had a history, and it was just there was a whole lot to that story. Yeah. It wasn't just Michelle. So
I didn't put money on him because A, he was 100-1, and B, you know, I didn't think he'd make it past the post the first time, let alone the second time.
Well, she's coming up. Plus, you know I love draft horses. They're ponies and draft horses are my favorites. And, you know, who doesn't like a Clydesdale? And, you know, I think that we in the United States think we have the exclusive on Clydesdales because of, you know, the Budweiser Clydesdales. But you guys have a few yourselves.
Well, going to be talking to Rod Kilgour today, who is the announcer for the National Clydesdale and Heavy Horse Festival that's on the 23rd to 25th of January in Melbourne. I went last year for the first time, and it's just the best show. Four in hand, Clydes and Percherons in harness. It's just fantastic. It was the best day. So, yeah, it is their national show, and they have a huge amount of people who travel a very long distance to be there and then spend a lot of time washing lots of white, hairy feet, really.
Yeah, see, that's the difference between the Percherons and the Clydesdales. You don't have to worry about that so much with the Percheron. So at least the black ones.
Yeah, the feather.
Yeah.
I actually teach a girl who has a pure Clydesdale, and I've learnt quite a bit about, you know, there's a whole lot of different tricks to keeping that feather right.
Yes. Yes.
And rules and everything.
Yes. Yes. And then usually they have huge manes and tails too. So they have to deal with that too. But yeah, I can't wait to talk to him. That'll be a lot of fun. So all of that is coming up on today's show. But we have a Daily Whinny to do first. And I know you have one. So let's do that.
My Daily Whinny goes out to my very good friend Nicole Tazzoni, who runs an organisation here called Raising the Standards, which is rehoming standard breeds. And you'll remember in the first Australian show we spoke to Tanya, who's with the HERO program through Harness Racing Victoria, which is also involved in rehoming standard breeds. But Nicole's just launched on her site a membership-only portal, which has a whole heap of information for people who may have taken on a standard bred. It's super cheap, and there'll be videos and there'll be content added all the time, but all of those standard bred specific topics, like how do I stop him pacing, how do I get the canter right, how do I get him leaning foot, stop him leaning forward on the bit, of course they're used to bearing down on that head check bit. And I've had a chance to have a look through it, and she's just done a super job. So her website's raisingthestandards.com.au, and you can go to the member section and check it all out.
I always like talking to you because it's so much fun to hear the differences in the English language around the world. And you have already said a couple of things that we say differently here in the United States.
Yeah, and I hear you saying things that I go, what's that? And then work it out.
All right, so let's compare notes. Let's do some horsey terms. What are the ones that really stand out to you that we say differently than you do?
The one that actually had me stumped for a while was flake of hay, and we would say biscuit. And I'm guessing talking about how the hay bales are, you know, how they fall apart in those little sections, yeah?
That's right, yes. That is a flake of hay, yes.
Yeah. Yep. I'd call that a biscuit. I'm pretty sure that's not just a me thing. I think that's
universal in
Australia.
Well, now, do you actually also eat biscuits?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you eat cookies. Ah.
Yeah, we do have biscuits too. Now, for us, a cookie tends to be softer and more cookie-like, and a biscuit is a harder kind of cookie.
Okay. I think cookies in Australia are probably only a recent thing with some of the big fast food companies coming through and keeping their branding from the States.
Ah, got it.
But they were always biscuits. When I was a girl, they were always biscuits. But the same with the hay, biscuit of hay.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that. Is it still a bale of hay for the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the same.
Yeah. And of course, then the other one is the, you say trailer, we say float. And I don't know why it's a float. Because
yeah, that one, I'm
UK,
sorry, it makes more sense as a trailer, but then they call them lorries. They call trucks lorries in England. Do they call them lorries where you are?
No, it's a truck.
Yeah, see? But float makes absolutely no sense, because it's not a boat.
But do you call, no, well, let's hope it doesn't.
Well, sometimes it's not a boat.
do you have gooseneck trailers? Would you, something that's attached to the back
of
a big?
Yes, that's a gooseneck.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so we still sell, have goosenecks.
Yeah, we have bumper pull and goosenecks, so that's the same, I think.
Yeah.
Now you have something too. The person that sits there with the judge and writes everything down, like for dressage and, you know, hunters and those kind of things, we call them a scribe.
Yeah, we call them a penciler.
Well, it kind of makes sense.
Sense.
It does make sense.
They're writing it down. I mean, both make sense, I guess.
Yeah, they both kind of make sense.
And I think a lot of our terms have come through from the UK.
Right.
Which makes sense because that's our origins, I guess. The other one, we have adjustment, which you would call boarding.
You have what?
Yeah, adjustment.
Is that like keeping my horse someplace?
Yeah. You'd board. You'd say I'm boarding my horse. I'd say I'm adjusting my horse.
Adjusting?
Yeah.
I have never heard that term before.
Really?
I have never heard of adjusting. That's a new one for me. And I've talked to a lot of people, you know, over the years in this show.
Yeah.
I have never heard of adjusting.
It's funny, isn't it? I don't even know the origin of that word. I think I will after this show. I'm going to look it up. Just like it sounds.
It really?
Yeah. Yeah, A-G-I-S-T-M-E-N-T.
Well, you know, an adjustment is an arrangement that two parties enter when an animal is taken or fed and pastured for payment.
Exactly.
I have never heard that. I learned something new today.
Yeah.
And of course, do you call them yards like they do in England, or do you call them farms or barns?
Well, see, we wouldn't use the word barn, we'd use the word adjustment center.
Oh, okay. If you had said that to 95% of Americans, they would have gone, what? it does sound something like something legal, that's for sure.
Yeah. But yard is more of an English term, I think. They talk about boarding their horses at yards.
Right. Which means a farm or a barn.
We would use farm or property or adjustment center.
Do you use ranch like we do?
No.
No? So what are your big
maybe
farms
some of the
called? The really big ones, which I know you have a lot of.
Well, we've got
the cattle farms
we've
and
got
stuff.
A lot of land. Stations.
Stations.
So up north, up through far north Queensland, far northwest Australia, stations. And they're measured in square kilometre.
Right.
They completely did away with acres or hectares or anything like that. They're measured in square kilometres. And a lot of those properties are also, because you're not going to fence the whole thing, but they're also divided by natural landmarks.
Mm-hmm. Rivers
and when they muster, you know, they're.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And when they muster, there may be, you know, a few beasts that have travelled from one side to the other, and they just sort of sort them out or pay the other stations. station owner, what they've got for, you know, their tagged cattle at sales or that. So there aren't a lot of fences up that way, because you're not going to go out and do a fencing contract on a, you know, 5,000 square kilometre property.
Right.
That's just not going to happen.
Right.
Not enough. There's not enough wire in the world for that.
So now, do you? So when it's a smaller farm, do you use acres?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 Acres, or I mean, still hectares a little bit, I guess, but acres would be the smaller. If you're talking about, you know,
like 5, 10 acres, a small.
Yeah.
Farm.
Yeah, yeah. 5, yeah. 10, 20, 50. Yep. 50 acres. As we get up a bit bigger, they'd probably, you know, interchangeable for hectares. But acres, everyone sort of knows where you're talking.
And you called, and something that struck me earlier when we were talking about the jockey coming up today, Michelle Payne, and you were talking about watching the Melbourne Cup. You said they were in the Mounting Yard. Yeah, we call that the saddling area, or
They often have two here, so they have, you know, that area where they'd be saddled and walked out, and then they'd come through to the, I guess, the public mounting yard or parade ring, and that's where the jockeys will actually get the call to be able to mount up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
So is there anything else that I love this stuff?
Rugs. See, we rug our horses.
Yeah, we do call them, we use that interchangeably, rugs and blankets.
Yeah. New Zealand call them covers. I couldn't work out what my friend was saying one night when she said she was just going out to put the covers on.
Yeah, I would have had to think about that one too.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what she was doing to her horses, but, you know, everyone seemed okay.
That's funny.
But, yeah, it's a very, very common term to use covers in New Zealand, which I'm not quite sure where that comes from.
Well, you are covering them, so it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does make sense. But we've always used, yeah, rug. But we tend not to use blanket, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty interchangeable here, yeah, especially for us old people, you know, because years ago we used to call them rugs. So They were rugs before they were blankets here. And because they really had no technology involved at all. They were canvas, and they were horrible, and they were hot, and they were hard to deal with. And when they got...
And there was only one of them.
That's right. And when they got wet, they were like a brick. And you could never dry the damn things. So, yeah, they were called rugs back then.
Yeah, I remember those very well.
They never dried, ever. In the winter, they just stayed a frozen brick the entire winter.
Yeah, yeah, particularly winter in Tasmania. Yeah.
And anybody under the age of 40 has no idea what we're talking about right now. Realize that?
I know. We used to have one rug, and that was it. And now there's,
And they were that creamy sort of yellowish color.
Mine were blue canvas with the wool underlay, like almost looks like carpet underlay.
Yep, that's right. I think it was remnants of carpet factories that they didn't use. That's what I think it was.
No, ours would be blue or green.
Yeah, ours were that icky sort of goldish color that showed every stain of poop imaginable. So...
And they were like one whole unit. It was like, you know, if you got a breeze under them, you'd be flown to the next property.
That is true. Especially after they got frozen stiff for the winter.
Yeah, absolutely.
You couldn't wash them because it would break your washing machine. It would just break because it would weigh about 300 pounds. Yeah.
Oh, no, you couldn't put them in the washing machine.
Those are the days. Well, they have improved a lot. Thank you, Weatherbeater and everybody else, for improving on blanket technology. Well,
and you know, you pop them in your own washing machine now.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to take them out
when your partner or your mother's not looking.
That's right. That's correct. All right, let's do this. Let's talk about Clydesdales. We have Rod Kilgore coming up. We're going to be talking about the National Clydesdale and Heavy Horse Festival.
Welcome to Rod Kilgour from the National Clydesdale and Heavy Horse Festival. Thanks for joining us, Rod.
It's a pleasure, Fiona. Nice to be here.
All right. Now, can I complain before we even get started about his voice and how good it is? I can tell he's the announcer, and every time someone comes on that sounds like he does, I just want to quit my job. I'm just saying.
Oh, you're very nice. Thank you.
I wish I had that voice right there. I could make twice as much money in my world. But no, Rod has it.
I have to admit to being only going to the Heavy Horse Festival for the first time in January last year, and it was really hot. It was about 41 degrees, so like 110 in American, and I had to warm up a student, and I wasn't particularly delighted about having to do it in that weather. And I ended up staying there for about 4 or 5 hours, A, because of the what was going on, but B, because of Rod's commentary was so absolutely fascinating about everything that was happening there. So, and I don't do hot, so congratulations, Rod.
thank you, Fiona. I've been involved with the Clydesdales and a professional radio announcer, I guess, pretty well all my life. So I've been about. So
have you been on? Were you on traditional radio before you got into announcing?
Yes, I was. I was a traditional radio announcer, a breakfast announcer on radio, and then I was involved for nearly 20 years as a sports commentator on our local television station here in Shepparton, Victoria.
Oh, wow. How'd you get into the draft horse thing then?
I always had a love of draft horses, and when I was a little boy, I can recall going around with my grandfather, who was a local grocer, to some of the farms in the area and seeing these lovely old Clydesdale horses with their flowing manes and their white noses, and they'd come along to greet you. And there was something fascinating about them. And I said, one of these days when I grow up, I'm going to have a draft horse. And that's what happened. I became very much enamored with them, and I've been involved with the Draft Horse Society for probably 15, nearly 20 years now.
Wow. So how long's the Heavy Horse Festival been going for?
I think this is about the seventh of the festivals. It started up in a situation where there were a number of Victorian, particularly breeders, who felt that the Melbourne show was either a little bit maybe expensive or a little bit tough for them, because all the really top breeders were at the show. And we wanted a show or a festival to bring those people out who may only have one or two or three horses, and they just wanted to come away for and have a fun weekend and show their horses. And really, that's how it started. And Werribee was the ideal place. It's a wonderful spot at the equestrian centre there. So we started it about 7 years ago, and we're still going.
And one other thing I've overheard and had friends say to me is that it is just the best fun weekend. Of everyone so inclusive, and you know, the evenings are just everyone sharing meals, and so obviously that's kept going all the way through the 7 years. It's very, you know, I mean, everyone was just so friendly that day I was there, and really they were prepping Clydesdales in 40 degrees and they were still happy.
Yes. It is the middle of summer. You say it may not be the best time, but it's about the only time that you can hire the National Equestrian Centre. It's so busy. But yeah, look, that's right. The Clydesdale people are just the nicest people, and I've been involved with Palominos and part Arabs and that sort of thing as well as in the life. But I just find the Clydesdale people—they're all true country people, and they're just terrific to deal with. They're more than happy to help out anyone, and they have a lot of fun. And that's the idea of Werribee, that we have a good, fun weekend and enjoy each other's company, enjoy showing our horses, but in a fun environment.
You know, I got to say, Rod, we were invited last year to go up, the Horse Radio Network was, to cover the World Percheron Congress, which was in northeastern United States, and we went up there, and I owned Percherons before, so I was so excited. It was on my bucket list, and they were the same way. I mean, we were wandering around, and they had the eight horse hitches running around, and they were like, oh, come on up, take a ride, you know? It was so cool to sit in the driver's seat with eight Percherons out there. It was just really neat, and we were involved in celebrity driving. They are a really fun group who are willing to talk to anybody.
And that's the beauty about it. And what we were endeavouring to do as the Clydesdale Society, because the Clydesdale is quite clearly the dominant breed of heavy horses in Australia.
But is it really?
We wanted to make it. Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah.
I didn't know that. See, here it would be the Belgian.
No, the Clydesdale would probably represent maybe 80% of the heavy horses in Australia. So that's quite considerable. But there are a number of other breeds, and this is another idea from the Clydesdale Society. We wanted to bring the other breeds in it and have a full heavy horse festival. So we have, of course, Shires, Percherons, Gypsy Cobs, Frisians, Highland ponies, Fjord ponies, and also we now have partbreds, events for partbreds as well. And they'll be led and driven and working draft horses. We also have the various events throughout the 3 days for the harness and pulling farm vehicles. So there's a fair variety there for all the heavy horses. And other than the breed day, which is on the Saturday, any of the heavy horses that are there are eligible to contend the other events for harness, etc. So it's a lot of fun, and we all get in together and enjoy it.
And I'm right, you're actually conducting the Australian Long Reining Championships there this year.
That's correct, Fiona. Yes, it's a new innovation that on the Monday, and we've previously only had 2 days of events, but on the Monday will be the third day this year for the first time, and we're conducting the Australian Long Reining Championship for the first time. So that's on Monday, we'll be judged. And we have an international judge, by the way. His name is Ronald Brewster. He comes from the United Kingdom, and he's also has his own Clydesdale and Shire stud. He comes from Perthshire in Scotland. So he'll be judging the led events for the Clydesdales and for the Shires and also other events as well. But the long reining day, we make a big thing of long reining and those types of events for working horses, because we're keen to keep promoting that side of the horse industry for sure.
Mm. And I need to know what day the fancy dress class is on, because that's the day I'm coming, because I want to see that Clydesdale dressed as a dragon again. That was the best thing ever.
Yeah, we do have a lot of fun with the fancy dress. They're really good. Now, I'm just looking here. I think it's on the Sunday, so I'll double check that.
I'm there.
Yes, it is. It's on Sunday. It's we have a 10 a.m. start each day, and the fancy dress is on a Sunday. And the imagination of these people is unbelievable. To see
seriously,
these horses,
you've not seen anything. You've not seen anything until you've seen a Clydesdale dressed as a dragon. I'm just saying.
Absolutely, Fiona, you're spot on. We have a lot of fun with that, and that's all part of enjoying the weekend at Werribee.
And are you having the trades? Last time I was there were quite a lot of trade stands there with the biggest halters I've ever seen. The trade stands are going to be a feature again?
There, as usual, the trade stands will be there, and we have the same loyal people coming along each year and providing the ability for people to come and visit the trade stands. And one I mentioned particularly is Noel Wiltshire, whose brother, as a matter of fact, has been involved in Clydesdales in the United States with the brewery team. And he helped. There was an ad many years ago of a Clydesdale horse kicking a football, an American football.
Yes, that's very popular to this day. I see it floating around.
Yeah, well, Noel Wiltshire, who's a local man from here in Victoria, his brother was involved in training the horses to kick that football.
Oh, really?
Noel has a wonderful range, and other people too have great ranges of harness, and anything to do with the horse side of it are all there for the trade stands. And of course, there's the usual hamburgers and drinks available as well. So there's breakfast and lunch available on the premises.
Do you guys at some of ours? Sorry, Fiona. At some of ours, the heavy horse competitions and things that we have here, they actually do plowing and things like that. Do you have the working horse classes like that?
We're not quite into the plowing because we're on an oval or an arena. The people wouldn't really like us to do that.
Oh, they don't want their arena plowed up.
No, that's the case. We do everything else, but we do log snigging and other events similar to that. And we have the availability for agricultural farm machinery, particularly the vintage machinery, and they come along and show just what they used to do. So there's a lot of fun, but they don't actually get as far as plowing.
How about pulling? Draft horse pulling here is a huge thing. I mean, it'll pack arenas, and that's pulling for weight. Do they do that there?
They don't, mainly because I guess we haven't had time in the past, but that's something that we'll have to address in the future, looking at the pulling of the weight, yes.
Yeah. That's huge here. I mean, you'll get thousands of people come out at an event to watch the pulling.
Well, everything's huge with heavy horses.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, friends from ours in Australia have been over to Canada for the World Championships, and they were stating how many different rigs of horses for the sixes and the fours. And
oh, yeah.
The mind just boggles. There are literally dozens and dozens. Well, unfortunately, we don't have that in Australia because there's just not enough horses around. But there's a sprinkling of them, and they come along and they are in the various different events throughout the weekend, and they really do pull an interest from the supporters for sure.
Well, I may have had a bit of dust in my eye when the two four-in-hand teams went past when I was there because it's just magnificent.
It is.
Look fantastic, really. You know, you just don't get the opportunity to see that a lot anymore.
No, you don't, Fiona. And I think I've only seen one rig of six horses in Victoria for the last few years, and that was the Carlton United Breweries team. And they look magnificent, but we still have a few fours going around, and the Marriotts particularly, that's a family that's been involved with showing horses for probably 60 years at the Melbourne show. And they will have a team of four, and Darren Phelan will have his team there probably too. So, and there'll be pairs and single horses pulling these lovely old wagons and lorries.
The presentation the presentation just blew my mind. You know, the lady that was dressed all in red with the, I think it was a black Percheron and all the, you know, patent leather, and it was just amazing, and the time and effort that goes into presenting these animals and the harness just was fantastic.
Well, I got to tell you, if either one of you get a chance, I had an opportunity at the Percheron World Percheron Congress to sit on the passenger seat of an 8 up, and when it was black Percherons, just that harness you were just talking about, right? And it is an unbelievable feeling to have those 8 horses, the power there, and the number of reins in that driver's hand is incredible. It's just incredible.
It's a great sight, and they do a terrific job. And I'm full of admiration for the people who drive them and the workers that there, because they do a huge amount of work. And for virtually no money, you know, they don't do it for the prize money because there's virtually nothing available. But they do it for the fun because they love their horses, and we're endeavouring to keep the breeds going as long as we possibly can, because they're only used now for fun and for showing. But Glenn, you may be interested to know that the Clydesdale horse itself was known as the breed that built Australia, because it was the first of the draft horses that, when it came out in the late 1860s and 1870s to Australia, they found it was most suitable for ploughing the large acreage of wheat and grain in Australia. And that's why the Clydesdale seemed to be superior to other horses, because of its long gait, and they were such quiet, easy-tempered horses. And that's why they became so popular.
That's interesting, because a lot of people don't realize that back in the late 1800s, the horses were a bit different. The Belgians and the Percherons tended to be smaller than they are today. That they've been bred up to where they are now. And in the United States, it's Percherons that were the biggest in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So you guys actually, the Clydesdales were the biggest of the breeds back then. So I can see why they would make sense for doing the large pastures and the big farms like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And there were so many big, larger farms, like in Great Britain, you might have a farm of 100 acres or 200 acres. Well, the large farms out here were, 500 to 1,000 acres, and now they're a lot bigger than that. But that's why you needed a horse that could cover the ground in the quickest possible time and do it well. And that's why the Clydesdale seemed to be by far the most popular.
And they would put them 6'8 across pulling that plower too.
They were usually quite often a 6'8 or 10 horse team, and if they were carting wagon loads of wool or wheat, you could have had a team of up to about 16.
That's a lot of harness.
Wouldn't that be a sight?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Thank you. A great sight.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Rod. Now, it's on at Werribee Park in Melbourne, yes. Victoria, from the 23rd to the 25th of January, which is the correct. Australia Day long weekend.
Yes, and Saturday, really, the 23rd, Sunday the 24th, and Monday the 25th of January at Werribee Park, yes.
And you for anyone who's handy, you have to go down. It's the best day. And, you know, I got to have a drive of a horse, just the one. It was very scary because they were a long way away from me. But everyone was just so welcoming. I had a blast.
And you can find it on Facebook also, the National Clydesdale and Heavy Horse Festival. Coming up here very shortly, and you'll find that on Facebook. They have a great Facebook page there that you can search and find it. We'll put a link to it also in our show notes at Horses in the Morning and also on our Facebook page. Hey, this has been fun, Rod. Thank you so much for joining us, and I still want your voice. I'm just saying.
Me too. Thank you, Glenn. In the female version.
thank you, Fiona. Thanks for the opportunity, and we're looking forward to the Heavy Horse Festival coming up in a couple of weeks.
Can I ask you one more question? We have another, more minute here. We had one of our guy listeners, and he just posted this. This is why I'm thinking about it, that he would love to apprentice to become an announcer at horse shows. If there are people out there listening that want to become announcers, what would you tell them to do?
Well, yes, it's not easy because when I was younger, 40-odd years ago, I went to a radio announcing school. Well, they don't seem to have them now. They're more journalist school.
Right.
But he would need to contact maybe one of these local radio stations and ask there whether there's any opportunity to learn to produce his voice. And that's the most important thing. You learn to produce your voice, and then it follows on from there. And tell him to read lots of newspapers as though he's reading them on television or on radio, and that's a good start.
And then also, if he wants to do horse shows, go to the little local horse shows, offer to sit in with the announcer, you know, kind of an apprentice
absolutely.
Thing, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Spot on. That's the best way to do it. Go to wherever you are locally. And say, look, can I help? Can I sit in? Can I listen, etc.? And then gradually, that's how you start, and that's the best way. And of course, if you succeed, then somebody will hear you higher up, and you'll go to a better quality show or something like that. And who knows? If you're keen enough and enthusiastic enough, it will happen.
And someday you might even make a dollar.
Maybe. I won't promise.
Thanks, Rod.
Thanks okay, so much,
thank
Rod.
Thank you, Fiona.
Bye. We're here with Saywood Brest from Chamberlain's Lawyers, and today we're going to talk about the sale and purchasing of horses and some common issues around it. So, Saywood, can you tell us, first of all, about how sellers can best protect themselves when they're selling a horse?
Okay, good question, Fiona. This is a question that we get asked a lot. There are a few ways that they can help to protect themselves during the course of the transaction. The first one I would recommend is being careful to not misrepresent the horse that you are selling. So that'll start actually before you even possibly meet the seller, if you're drafting, say, ads for popular websites or magazines. You want to make sure that you're not representing the horse as something that horse isn't.
Great.
The buyer is going to expect all of the information to be true and correct in the ad. So you want to make sure that you're careful with your wording, because sometimes we've had matters where people have said something about the horse, which they genuinely thought was true, but because it was not worded clearly enough, it actually was used against them later. Because it was misinterpreted and it wasn't what they meant.
Right.
But it could easily be misinterpreted. And that can be a problem with ads, because people are limited in how many characters they can have in an ad. So they may not form complete sentences like you normally would if you were speaking or writing a longer ad. So you just need to be careful about what you're putting in the ad in the first place. That would be where I would start. Go ahead, Fiona.
No, I was just going to say, of course, it is so important, because obviously those advertisements are
a moment in time that's available to people to be printed out and kept and perhaps that's used. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they can keep that as evidence later if you get into a dispute. So you just want to be careful that everything in the ad is true and correct. So probably best off maybe writing your ad, going away, having a little think about it, and then going back and rereading it again and just checking that it's okay before you publish it.
Great advice.
The next area that I would say sellers need to protect themselves in is most of the time what's going to happen, and certainly what I would recommend, not from the legal perspective but from the horse person perspective, is the buyer's going to want to come and look at the horse and ride the horse.
Yep.
And may also bring his or her trainer with him to also ride and look at the horse. So sellers should really think about having just a basic indemnity and waiver form available that needs to be signed by people that are riding on their property, on their horses, to protect themselves just in case someone is riding on their property and has an accident or something happens. That would be one that you could use also for your regular lessons, but you would want to get that from anyone that was riding on your property, and that would include people coming to look at sale horses.
Great. And in turn, then, how can buyers best protect themselves when they're looking at purchasing a horse?
Okay. So I would recommend for buyers, and this is not from the legal perspective, but just from the practical horse person perspective, that they take their trainer along, someone who knows their riding skills and abilities really well, and someone that's also going to be confident enough to ride this strange horse, preferably before the buyer actually gets on the horse. Test the horse out. You may want to ride the horse more than once. Yep. Some sellers will even agree to meet you at a neutral ground, say your local pony club or showground, so that you can experience what the horse is like when it's being trailered and used somewhere else other than where it's normally ridden at home. I definitely say you want to test it. Obviously, as most people would already know, you're probably going to want to do a pre-purchase exam on that horse. So those are your basic things that buyers need to do. Now, in terms of the legals, and this goes for the sellers as well, is that it's best to have an actual sale agreement so that you can identify all of those terms that people would not normally think or talk about if they were just doing an oral agreement. And then you can get all of the agreement settled so that it's comprehensive and each party knows what he or she is actually agreeing to. Most of the time when we get disputes over horses that have been sold, one of the problems in the dispute is there was no written agreement.
Of course.
And that always comes back to be a problem later, because then the parties are actually in dispute over just the basic terms that should have been written down and easy to identify in the first place.
Yep. And different parties have interpreted those terms in different ways in many cases.
Correct, because when they're doing oral agreements, they don't nut out all of those fine details that you would in a written agreement.
Yep.
And so one side might think they're agreeing to A, the other side thinks they're agreeing to B, but because they haven't actually really thoroughly gone over it, they think that they've agreed, but they actually haven't.
Yeah.
Because they've each got a different understanding of what they're agreeing to.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for that advice, Saywood. And where can people best get in contact with you?
So you can send me an email. It's saywood.breath@chamberlains.com.au. Or you can get in touch with me just by putting an inquiry in on our website, chamberlains.com.au. I also have an equine legal services Facebook page for Chamberlains. So if you just go to Facebook and you just put in the search bar Equine Legal Services Chamberlains Law Firm, you'll be able to find me, and you can send me a private message on the Facebook page.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Fiona.
I just need to give a little note that the legal advice given in these advertisements is obviously general in nature, and it's also relevant to the Australian market, although a lot of that advice is just plain good old-fashioned common sense. But if you, you know, laws change from state to state and country to country. So if you are interested in any of those things, if you're in Australia, check in with Saywood. But if you're out of the country, check in with your local friendly lawyer.
Very good. Well, let's listen to a song, and we're coming back with the big interview of the year so far. Fiona has the big get. So we're going to be back with that in just a second.
I want to walk with you. I want to talk with you. I want to see the world through your eyes. I want to stay with you. I want to play with you. Hear the rain fall down from your skies. Don't be afraid to show me what you made of. What you think they mean? I wanna feel what makes your heart beat. If you take a stand that I don't understand, it's okay if it's confusing to me. Uncomplicated is so overrated. Love is not just something you do. Talk with you. I want to see the world through your eyes.
Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek, and I am here with Fiona of Remote Coach, and we are doing the Australian episode that we do here once a month on the first Thursday of every month. And of course, do you want to talk a little bit about Remote Coach as well?
Well, there's some cool things happening at Remote Coach, and I'm actually able to let you guys know first up about a very, very exciting product that I'm really excited to bring to the market. It's called Real Riders, and there's not a whole lot of information up yet, but if you go to realriders.co, you'll be able to register to receive further information on it. But it's going to be a membership-based website where you'll be able, that we're going to have lots and lots of different hubs. So there'll be a hub for your daily riding exercise that will be an audio download for you to ride with. There's going to be hub with video on how to do stuff from vets, like how to take a temperature correctly, how to pick which leg's lame. There'll be a hub on meals to make for yourself, not for your horse. There'll be some of those as well, but meals to make for yourself and exercises for you as a rider, just for that everyday rider who is busy, is juggling kids, juggling a job, juggling the horse, and just making it a one-stop shop to find stuff out and have a whole heap of really invaluable resources to hook into. So I'm writing like a crazy woman, and my lovely business partner, Beck, is designing a website like a crazy woman, and it will be up on 1st of March. But if you head to realriders.co now, you can register. We'll be doing an opening special where you'll get some freebies as part of becoming a member as well. And there'll be more information coming out soon, but that's hot off the press. I haven't even put it on my Facebook page yet.
Great.
Yeah, lots and lots of work, but very excited.
Very good. Well, let's get to your big interview. Do you want to tell everybody? Well, we talked about it earlier in the show about the Melbourne Cup and the importance of it and how it's kind of like the Kentucky Derby of Australia, of the Southern Hemisphere.
Well, it's billed as the race that stops a nation. And ever since I was a little girl at race time on Melbourne Cup Day, everyone stops in this country and listens to or watches the Cup. And I think it's because of the international horses coming out now, I think it stops more than a nation, to be honest.
Well, do we want to talk a little bit about she talks about the horse a little bit in the interview, yeah, because you pre-recorded this.
Yeah.
But I don't think that she really went into it. Let's talk about that after the interview, because sure, there really is a lot more to say about this horse as well. So let's just take a listen. Now, her cell phone connection was not terrific. Hopefully, with some of the money she won, she can get a new cell phone. But, but it wasn't terrific. But you can hear her, and I've kind of enhanced it a little bit, so it was a little bit better. But bear with it. She's worth listening to, and absolutely delightful. This is the jockey, the first female jockey to win the 2015 Melbourne Cup, Michelle Payne.
Welcome, Michelle, to Horse Radio Network, and thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, firstly, a little thing happened on the first Tuesday in November for you. How's life changed? Has life changed?
Yes, it has changed completely, I would say. it's something I probably wasn't really prepared for. Obviously, you hope that you're the lucky one that gets over the line in front, but obviously you're not prepared for what comes after it. So it has definitely been a life-changing experience, and being able to enjoy so many exciting things that I definitely would never have if I hadn't won that race.
Absolutely, and I mean it's a massive thing for any jockey, but being the first female jockey, I mean you were just on every media network in the country and probably around the world the next day. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, I probably just didn't realise the significance of it. I just sort of seen myself as another jockey, and I realised it was going to be a pretty big deal, but obviously a lot bigger than I had ever thought. So, it's amazing to think that a three-minute race can change your whole life.
Yeah. Now, am I right? Were you one of the first female jockeys a number of years ago to have actually competed in the Melbourne Cup?
So I think that I was only the fourth or fifth female ever in the Melbourne Cup, and I rode in it in 2009 was my first ride in the Cup. So I think I was about the third then, so there was a few before me, and I thought it was bad for some of those girls, especially Claire Lindup, who'd ridden in the Melbourne Cup twice, and she'd given them great hopes both times and ran fifth, so it's a bit of a shame for her that I ended up being the first one, but hopefully it'll open up more opportunities for us.
Yeah, I actually grew up in Launceston around the time Beverly Buckingham was doing her apprenticeship. I'm sure you're familiar with that name from years gone by, and she won the Jockey's Premiership, you know, all those years in my teenage years. So it was a massive thing then in the 1980s. But she was a fairly serious trailblazer for female jockeys then. So,
She certainly was. She was probably somebody who gave me great inspiration, especially reading her book, which was, after obviously she had a bad incident. She was a great inspiration to me.
Yeah, I agree. Her book's great. I think I pinched it off my mother's bookshelf one Christmas when I was at home and really enjoyed reading it. So how many rides have you had in the Cup? Was this your second ride?
Yeah, it was my second ride. I think I was 6 years apart. So it's everybody's dream, obviously, just to get a ride in the race, let alone be lucky enough to win it. So first and foremost, you're wrapped to be a part of it and in the field, and it's so exciting. And I think being the second time, it probably helped me be a little bit more relaxed and comfortable with the whole situation. So I have to say a big thank you to Bart Cummings, who actually gave me my first ride in the Cup.
Because
that
bless.
Definitely probably helped on the day with Prince, that I was I knew what was Bart got to be prepared for, basically.
Yeah, and it was a strange Melbourne Cup not having Bart there, I have to say, this year. It was didn't feel quite right watching it without seeing Bart there.
Yeah, definitely. It was quite different to what we were used to, and but it was great. Everybody paid lovely tribute to him, and obviously he was a master. So, it was sad to not have him there this year.
Yeah. Now, did it feel like everything in the race actually just... Did it feel like it was a massively hard job to get him into that right place, or did it all just slot into place for you as the race was unfolded?
Obviously, every jockey goes into the race with a plan, and you have different scenarios that you think can happen and all the rest of it. And when we do Barrier 1, we were right with that, because we just felt that would give us the best opportunity to give him every chance in that field. So when we did the planning and everything, it looked as though it was going to work out pretty well, and thankfully it did. And then at the 1,000, the runs that I was hoping would open up did, and I had a horse to take the gaps, and Darren Weir had prepared the horse in perfect order for that day. He peaked perfectly on the right day, which is true testament to him and what Bart was able to do every Cup. It's a real art to be able to do that. So I just had the horse at the right time, and yeah, everything fell into place beautifully.
And I mean, it was a massively strong international field. I watched at home from the comfort of my lounge room rather than the racetrack, and you know, I was watching the horses move around, and I kind of went, oh, you know, it feels like there's a little bit of Melbourne gone out of the Melbourne Cup, because it is such a big international race. So I was jumping up and down in my lounge room when that run opened up for him, because there wasn't there wasn't a downside to the whole story. It was just such a great story of the battler getting up from you to the horse to the trainer to your brother. Like, it was just, you know, there wasn't a downside to the story.
Yeah, and I feel that's probably why people embrace it as well, with all the internationals and the amount of money that's put into every horse that comes over and what those horses are worth. I think that's what racing's about, and why it's so great that you can have a little $50,000 horse from New Zealand, which the others are worth probably millions of dollars, and we knock them all off. So I feel that that's why everybody embraced the win so much more than any other. And, I think it's great. I think it's great for racing, and that's basically why I love it, because everybody's got a chance, whether you've got a lot of money or not a lot of money. So, it was fantastic.
Absolutely. Now, this is a horse radio network. We want to know about the horse. Tell us about Prince of Penzance.
So Prince of Penzance, always, from the very first moment I sat on him, showed that he had the X factor about him. He just seemed to have this inner strength about him, which was really evident to me when I first rode him. And all the way through his career, he showed that. And not only that, he matured into an even better horse. And unfortunately for him, he'd sort of been plagued by injury. He had 4 different surgeries on his legs, so his bone sheets were removed, and Ben suffered a colic attack at the start of the year in February, which he had to have a massive operation on, and they say they don't usually come back from that. So
absolutely.
He's a pretty special horse, what he's done, and Darren Weir said usually each operation takes a little bit away from them, and unbelievably, he just got better each preparation and got stronger and more mature, and just coming to his own on Melbourne, well, that year, the Melbourne Cup.
And was he cool as a cucumber on that day, right from when you got on him? Does he have any little quirks? Because you've ridden him for nearly all of his races.
He began really slowly from the barrier. I think being in there a long time from barrier one, he was really relaxed and just began a bit slow. And I just, the last thing I wanted to do was give him a bit of a squeeze out of the barriers and make him sort of get up into a position. I just wanted to land there, but unfortunately I had to do that, and it just got him a little bit fired up, and he was pretty keen through the race, which obviously in a 2 mile race you don't want to be pulling, you want to be relaxed and in a rhythm. But he was really strong on the bridle, but still rocking along nicely and breathing, and I think it's just an even true testament to his ability to be able to do that and then sprint at the end of the race. Like, obviously a lot of people said it was a slowly run race and everything fell into place for him, but he had to put himself into the position for it to happen. And, it's true testament to him and how tough of a horse he is.
Of course, I had many of my music theatre friends had money on him because of his name, and yeah, they still like to remind me of just how much money they won on Melbourne Cup Day and just how much money I didn't win.
I love hearing the stories of a lot of people that that did have a wager on him. It's incredible that how many people did because of being a female jockey. And I love those stories.
They're great. And does he have what's he up to at the moment? Is he still out on a spell?
He's out having a good break. He had a pretty, not a long preparation, but obviously it's a tough race, so he's having a well-earned break, but it's the best he's ever pulled up from the preparation, which is incredible. And, hopefully next year he can come back as better, as good as he was, or maybe even better, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, you come from a fairly serious racing family in Victoria. Exactly how many of your siblings are involved in racing? There are 9 of you, is that correct?
So there's 10 children, and I'm the 8th jockey of the lot. I'm the youngest, obviously, and my brother Stephen has Down syndrome. He was a strapper with Prince Tendent, other strapper Maddie, and he's always working with horses. He loves sort of getting out there on race day and the big crowds, and he's very capable of doing anything from consume themselves and basically anything.
A friend of mine does some media out at the Kilmore racetrack, and she got to meet Stevie a couple of weeks after the cup, and she sent me a message and said he offered me his autograph, which was fantastic because it saved me from being embarrassed asking him for it. And he gave her the tip on how to pull a good barrier draw as well. So he sounds like a great character.
Oh, he certainly is. I think he takes a lot after my dad, but he's definitely thrown into the stardom role very well. He's a natural at it, and he loves the attention. So it's been fantastic for him, and we can't thank Darren Weir enough for giving him the opportunity to grow as a person with having the responsibilities that he has given him.
Oh, and look, it's pretty clear that he's a, you know, a very active and valuable team member of Darren's, and you know, he's not, you know, he's a full employee. Darren's probably not making a whole lot of allowances, and it's just great to see that he's been given those opportunities.
Oh, it's fantastic. And obviously he is very capable, and obviously everybody loves him. It's hard not to. And obviously a lot of money goes into these horses and everything, so it's great for Darren to give him that opportunity and give him, you know, the chance to prove that he can do it. So we're so grateful for that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, that's got to be some sort of a world record for the number of siblings as jockeys and working directly in the racing industry.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether my dad was actually too keen on all of us becoming jockeys, because obviously it's a very dangerous sport, but we grew up with them, and he was a horse trainer and a jumps jockey himself, so basically I guess we fell in love with the sport and the animal, and that's the way that we wanted to head, so he didn't have too much choice. But yeah, I guess it is probably up there with one of the records.
And what was the first horse that your dad got you? I'm guessing it wasn't a in-work thoroughbred.
Yes, sir. Well, we did have a little pony, which is a little Shetland pony, which probably was worse than the racehorse. Yeah. It was very naughty. But basically, we learnt to ride on the racehorses. Dad didn't have time with 10 children to be buying ponies, and my mum passed away when I was a baby, so he had all of us. So basically, we were just thrown in the deep end and sent to yourself and do the best. And you learn how to hang on.
Absolutely. Wow. He must be about the proudest dad in Australia at the moment, I'm guessing.
I don't know. He doesn't let on too much, but I'm hoping he is.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. And you mentioned, I mean, we touched earlier about Beverly Buckingham's injury, and you've had some fairly serious injuries from the sport also.
Yeah, I have. Obviously, it is a very dangerous sport, but every jockey obviously knows the dangers when you go out there. And there's been quite a few times where it's been pretty sort of pretty bad injuries, and my family has sort of wanted to push me out of away from coming back. And I just always felt that I wanted to give it my best shot and hadn't done so at that stage. So I wanted to be the one to make the decision to give up rather than be forced out through injury. So, it's just obviously part of the game, and you just hope that it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely. Well, you've certainly reached about as high a point as you can in Australian racing. So, congratulations on it again. I know it probably feels like an age ago for you, but I tell you, I still get goosebumps when I see the replay of the race. It's one of the great ones. And thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk with us this morning.
No, thank you very much. And I have to say, I still get goosebumps. Doesn't matter how long ago it is, nearly every day somebody will say something that will help me relive the moment. So definitely still living in the moment and enjoying it.
Fantastic. And look, thank you for being such a fabulous ambassador for racing in Australia also. It's great job.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much for having me.
This horse, what was the horse's name again?
Prince of Penzance.
Prince of Penzance. I keep wanting to say the Pirate of Penzance, but it was.
I know. And all my music theatre friends put money on him and won, and they all let me know.
Well, and that's where I got it from, too. That's where I got Pirate of Penzance.
Yeah.
But so now, did she say this horse had four surgeries?
He's had four leg surgeries, and I'm not actually sure what exactly leg surgeries they were, but I'm guessing bone chips and things like that. And in February of last year, it still feels weird saying last year, in February of last year, he had a colic surgery, which, you know, horses that have colic surgeries may come back as paddock sound. I mean, they don't always, well, they certainly don't all go out and win a Melbourne Cup.
No, they don't. And this horse went off at like 101-1 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was crazy odds, yeah.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, three people bet them to the win, and they were bet that horse to win. It was all your friends.
That's right.
Only theater people bet on that horse. That's right.
That's right. But with no, you know, that's the only race they look at for the entire year.
it must have paid big money.
Yeah. And look, as Michelle said in the interview, a lot of people popped money on because she was a female jockey as well. So, you know, the sentimental bet was really the one he and she were getting, certainly not the punter's bet. You know, they weren't putting money on him. It's just, look, there's just not a bad side to the whole story. The trainer is, you know, you look up Australian bloke in the dictionary and there's a photo of Darren Weir, his trainer. Like, really, he's such an Australian bloke who's, you know, been slogging it out on the country racing circuit for years and years and years. And, and he's employed her older brother, Stevie, who has Down syndrome. And he's a very, you know, Stevie's always been a very valuable member of the team. And, you know, there's just not a downside to the story. It's the best.
Very good. Well, I'm glad you got that interview with her. She's absolutely a delight, and we wish her, isn't she? We wish her the best of luck. I hope she continues to win races all over Australia and the world.
Yeah, me too. She's great.
She'll get to travel a little bit and get to do some fun things. You know, we have an adopted bug. I don't know if you heard that episode with Callie.
I heard it this morning. Yeah.
We've been following her for years, and she was a friend of ours before, and, you know, she's just getting into the racing world, and it's a tough world for a girl. You know, I really put her on the spot when I asked her that question, Callie, from a couple days ago, and you asked her the question about being in a man's world because, you know, she had to be careful how she answered it. But it is a tough world for a female. And I don't care if you're in Australia or in the United States, but it's getting better. So
did she say that she'd been riding in Australia?
Yeah, she went to Australia and worked down there for, is it Gay?
Gay Waterhouse.
Yes.
Yep.
She worked for Gay Waterhouse for a year, I think, in Australia. Okay. And then, because you guys have a different way of getting your apprentice jockeys in the saddle in races.
I don't understand what that bug word is.
Yeah, well, that just means that they're an apprentice jockey.
Okay.
They're not a full jockey yet. They're apprenticing. And you guys have a better, an easier route to get that accomplished, to get them experience than here in the United States. Right. So for her to go down there, she actually got more saddle time in races, in like baby races. You guys have races for apprentice jockeys where
yes.
we don't.
Yes.
And that's why she and a lot of the jockeys in training will go to Australia is because of that. They actually get more saddle time.
Great.
So that's why that happened.
Yep.
And I think that actually Gay Waterhouse, if I'm remembering right, is the one that Monty Roberts goes down and works with to train the babies.
Okay.
Yeah,
she won last year's Melbourne Cup. And I'm just trying, well, last year before, 2014 Melbourne Cup, and I'm just desperately trying to remember the horse's name. And that was the first time certainly not the first time a female trainer had won, because Sheila Laxton won 10 or so years ago with, I think it was a mare called Ethereal, but Gay won last year. And that was a big thing for Gay, because she's obviously won every other main race in this country, and the Melbourne Cup had eluded her.
Ah, gotcha.
And of course, the other thing that Michelle mentioned, which some of your United States listeners might not know, was that Bart Cummings gave her first ride in the Melbourne Cup, and we touched on Bart in there also, and he won, well, now we're fighting maybe 13 Melbourne Cups, was, you know, our greatest trainer, and he passed away the middle or so of last year. So it was the first Melbourne Cup without Bart on the grounds, and Bart was fantastic. You know, you could always guarantee Bart, you know, a reporter would come up with a, you know, reasonable question of Bart, and Bart would just cut them down with a one-liner back to them. He was fantastic. I think Bart hit about 80 and just went, I can say what I want. But master trainer, and had obviously supported Michelle greatly as well.
Well, I just did take a look. Yes, it was Gay Waterhouse is the reason that Monty goes down to Australia every year, is to help her in the training, especially in the gates. You call them something different, don't you?
Barriers.
That's where they put the horses in before they go.
Yeah,
we call them gates. And he actually is very good at training horses that are a little reluctant to go in the gate.
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons that he was there. And she also is really a natural horsemanship trainer, too, and one of the better racing trainers. So good. It's a small world how it all comes together in the horse world.
It sure is. Yeah. Yep, sure is.
Small world. Even here at the Horse Radio Network, it's a small world. Well, now, did we miss anything?
I don't think so. Feels like that's a full
show. That's a full show, yes. Thank you so much for putting that together. I do enjoy when we get to chat once a month about all things Southern Hemisphere. And we look forward to chatting with you again next month. Now, I want to remind everybody that you can go back and listen to past episodes that Fiona was on and Remote Coach just by going to Horses in the Morning and searching, use the search function and just search for Fiona. It'll bring up all our past, or Australian or Remote Coach. It'll bring up all the past episodes.
I'm easily found.
Yep. And you can listen to them all in a row. If you missed them, she's had some terrific guests on, and they've always been a lot of fun. So
I feel like I've set the bar fairly high for 2016, though.
Yeah, you're starting pretty good in my eyes. You talked about draft horses, which I love, and then you got one of the biggest guests you could get in all of Australia right now in the horse world. So yeah. I don't know where you go from here, actually.
No, neither do I. I might have to, I'll take a moment and think about that.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Why don't you give your website again?
www.remote-coach.com or realriders.co, or you can find me on Facebook at Remote Coach.
Very good. And of course, you can find all the past episodes that we have done, all 1,300 of them, at horsesinthemorning.com. You can find all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network on our app. Just go to the iOS or Android app store, search for Horse Radio Network, and Horses in the Morning is one of 9 different shows on the network. It's free. It's easy to download. It's the best way. And of course, we want to thank Chamberlain's Lawyers for also being one of your terrific sponsors, right?
Sure do. Saywood's fantastic. So for all of our Australian listeners who feel like they need a little bit of legal advice, give Saywood a call because she's really lovely to talk to as well. So it's not like you're dealing with a proper lawyer at all.
Well, very good, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning. It's Friday, which means it's Really Bad Ads Day, everybody's favorite section of the week. So get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Just go on Craigslist. It'll take you 2 minutes to find a bad ad. and then send it over. Fiona has been known to send a few over because apparently you have people that do bad ads in Australia, too.
Oh, we do. Yes. We do.
Get some horrendous horse trailers in Australia. I got to tell you, some floats, as you call them.
There are some there. I wouldn't go in them. There's probably a whole nest of snakes in there.
Yes, exactly. And you have big snakes in Australia.
Yeah, we have a whole lot of things from the knee down that can kill you.
That can kill you. That's true.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. here at Horses in the Morning. See you, Fiona.
Bye.